It's time for Cutting Edge Consciousness with Reman Michaels and Barnett Bain. Thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And welcome to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Freeman Michaels here with my co-host,
Barnett Bain. I had to think about it for a while. That was my FM
very
voice.
Very serious.
Well, we're considering
today.
Offers.
We're considering offers. That's funny.
That was my FM voice. My raspy, my FM voice.
We made it today.
Wow,
unbelievable.
That was quite an ordeal.
Well, we won't go into it, but the truth is we're very pleased to be on the air today. Ay, ay, ay. Anyhow, the journey of this show has so many bends and twists to it. It is such a fantastic mirror.
Fortunately, we're belted in here.
We're strapped in today.
We're strapped in here to the show.
We talk often about hearing from, you know, these various parts of us. That
well,
get
we
reflected.
Call them the critics.
There are a lot of different characters in this.
They're always mirrors of the inner critics. But until you get integrated and pull back and deal with it, first we have to go through all the triggering of relating to the outer critics, pretending they're coming at us.
Well, it's interesting because, and I think we'll just I'll be really open about this.
The latest critic?
My wife. My wife was listening She's so tough.
Hi, Jazz. That's right. I didn't mean it.
Yeah, I'm the one saying it. So she hammered us pretty good the other day. Well, she hammered me, and then I reported it to you. And in part, you know, look, in truth, I think my wife had some really good points. We were listening to a show, and she said, I got totally lost for a minute. I don't know what you and Barnett were talking about.
We didn't need it.
That's what I told her. I said, we didn't need it. She goes, that's not good, Freeman. You need to actually. And so, look, here's the point. One of the things that you and I committed to, and I'm not sure this is a good idea. This is just what we committed to.
Let's not get lost here.
No, this is what we committed to, is that we wanted to stay on our edge. We didn't want to, or our intention was to push beyond our comfort zone. So, you know, we both can very easily get wrapped up in our talking points and keep recycling and recycling the same points over and over again. And I think to some degree, you know, look, we do that. But our intention
was to explore and be willing to do it openly front of people and risk having it be messy.
And boring.
There's moments when we hit the sweet spot.
That's right.
And then, like all performers, you look at yourself. Now you're no longer in it. You look at yourself, so you go, wow, I hit the sweet spot. And then going forward, you're constantly looking for that sweet spot. It becomes inauthentic, and you drift back to the center of what is familiar and
in the spirit of, and this language isn't correct, but I'll say it this way. In the spirit of getting it right, you have to be willing to get it wrong. And then the minute that you get it right again, you get it right. You have to then be willing to unwind that and go back to not knowing. I mean, that's the craft of any artistic pursuit. I mean, you and I both have done this.
So I guess what you're saying is the point is...
I don't know what the point is.
I'm not sure. We sort of went left and right, but that's probably... So we're going to hear from Jazz in about 10 minutes.
Right.
So please. The point is you do what you do for yourself. We do it for ourselves.
Yeah.
And that, as the most authentic as we can be with ourselves, that's the gift that we can bring to others. And it's messy because sometimes we think it's being authentic and it's not, and it's being a performance, and it goes back and forth. But to that point,
yes,
this is going to be the most strained segue you've ever heard. So.
Don't say that. I think it's going to be a perfect segue.
We're just going to slide right into this. Watch this, Dexter.
I'm ready.
Now you're going to see some radio stretching. So, in the name of being as true as you possibly can be to yourself.
That's it. Good job, Mr. Bain.
Out of that comes sharing that is generous to others as well.
That's it.
And so... we happen to have with us today...
a big sharer.
A big, big sharer.
Mm.
A big, big sharer. Fresh off the trail. I hope his feet are... I hope his feet are in Epsom salts right now.
That's right.
We have fresh from the Camino Trail, my friend Jimmy Twyman, who's a New York Times bestselling author of 15 books.
Wow.
All right, it's only 14 more than you.
It's only 14 more than me.
Including the Moses Code and the Barn Dance and...
You're going to read all 15?
He is the producer and director of a bunch of films, four or five films, the Moses Code among them, and Indigo, the award-winning Indigo, and the Camino of St. Francis. We're going to hear a lot more about that, too. He's also the founder of the Beloved Community and a world-renowned and international troubadour and a beautiful, beautiful human being. And we are glad that he's here with us today. He is here with us today, isn't he?
I am here. Whew. Thank you so much for having me as well.
Thanks for joining us. We're thrilled to have you. Listen, you've risked putting yourself out there in a lot of different ways. So I don't know if you can relate to what Barnett and I are pondering.
Yeah. Oh, I relate a great deal to the edge that you were talking about. And you know, there is this creative flow that sometimes you really don't know where you're going until you end up there.
Yeah.
So I can really relate to what you guys were talking about and just the whole energy of it all.
I love the story, and I think it's your first book, where you sort of first embodied the peace troubadour. I don't want to call it a persona because I realize it's very much who you are, but you went out as this sort of symbol of what was possible in terms of peace, and specifically in Bosnia. I want to say back in the middle 80s. I could be wrong about that. I'm sure you'll correct me.
Middle 90s. Actually.
Middle 90s. Okay, sure, because this is in the middle of the Bosnian Croatian war, Serbian Croatia war. And you were willing to reveal your experience in a book that became a bestseller.
Yes, it was. I think it relates to what you guys were talking about in the sense that I didn't set out to write a book. I didn't set out to really do anything but share who I was.
Yeah.
And something had happened to me with these prayers of peace that come from all the different religions, like the Buddhist prayer for peace, the Hindu, the Christian, the Muslim. And I put them all to music and just had this idea, wouldn't it be really cool to just travel around and share these prayers, especially in the places where they're needed the most? And at that time, that was Bosnia and Croatia. And I just kind of wrangled my way into getting invited there, and one thing led to another, and before I knew it, I was in the midst of this amazing adventure, none of which I could have planned, of course.
Right.
And when I came home from the adventure, my first thought was, well, what now? I mean, what do I do with this, you know, now that my life has changed? I thought, well, I may as well write it down. So I wrote it down, and, you know, one of the interesting things that happens, and I think this is a case in point to what you guys were talking about, when you do follow that inner guidance and you really just, you know, give yourself abundantly, things just happen on their own.
Right, providence. Providence,
yeah,
is the word.
I mean, that first book, Emissary of Light, I wrote in 2 weeks. 2 days later, I met a literary agent, and she sold it the next day. So in less than 3 weeks, I had written the book and sold it, and I had never written a book in my life at that point. So it just goes to show that the impossible can happen when we're aligned.
And I love the motivation. I'm sorry, even the language. Wouldn't it be cool? I mean, like everything. If we can start anything with just that phrase, wouldn't it be cool?
Wouldn't it be great?
Wouldn't it be
great? That. That's true, yeah.
Well, Jimmy, you just came out of it. Wouldn't it be cool to hoof it down the Camino Trail?
In the spirit of peace. Let's talk about it.
In the spirit of peace.
I love it.
How was that for you? I got an email or a Facebook something that you were getting a little blister action there.
Oh, yeah.
You had a little foot thing going.
Yeah, well, the Camino you're referring to is the famous Camino de Santiago, which many people have heard of, many books, a great movie that just came out last year about it called The Way. And for over 1,000 years, millions of people from around the world have walked this 800-kilometer stretch through Spain to arrive in Santiago. And in the last 20, 25 years, it's become really popular again, and I'd always wanted to walk this. And I guess this last couple of years has just been the years for walking, because I started last year. There is another Camino called the Camino of St. Francis. which goes through Italy, sort of following along the footpaths that Francis would have walked 800 years ago.
And this was to commemorate the 25 years anniversary of a famous collection
That's
of
right.
various religious leaders, right?
Exactly. And in fact, that 25th anniversary was really kind of the birth of my own ministry, because it was at that gathering 25 years ago that the prayers from all the different religions of the world were prayed, and those were the prayers I put to music. So once again, I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could go back there, you know, 25 years later and share these prayers and sing them like I have around the world in so many other places, like Bosnia and Croatia and Iraq. And the interesting thing, and this is why it became important that we do this, of course, Pope John Paul II was the one who called this gathering 25 years ago, because he was so into interreligious dialogue and that kind of thing. The current Pope of the Catholic Church, however, is very different. So he knew he had to do something to commemorate this event from his predecessor, but he put his own little twist on it by bringing the leaders together but not letting them pray.
Hmm.
So they could come and give speeches, but they would not be allowed to pray together as they did 25 years ago. So that was our signal to, you know, okay, someone's got to do this. Someone's got to bring these prayers back, because this is really what the heart of that gathering was 25 years ago. So that's what we did. And we actually made a movie of the whole thing,
of the
concert and of the walk, and the lovely documentary, which people can actually watch for free online. All they have to do is go to jamestwyman.com, and the movie is right there. You can just click on the link and watch the whole movie. And that's one of the reasons why that's cool, is because we're going to be doing another one of those journeys in September. So if anyone has ever wanted to walk through Italy and go to Assisi, watch that film. It's just a free offer. You can just go to my website and watch it. But anyway, back to your original question, that's what led me to want to walk the Camino de Santiago, because I started to feel after that that Italy walk how wonderful it was to just get onto the earth, you know, to put on some hiking boots and to pray along the way and to be active, not just theorize or sit in my room talking about things, but to actually get out there and actively do something. And we had about 40 people walk with us, and it was an amazing journey, and I'm looking forward to doing it again.
And what was the high point of it for you? Or what was the point right before the high point, where you think, what am I doing here?
The doubt before the... Did you have a little bit of a, like, what the heck is this about moment?
Oh, there are, you know, I have to say, without those moments, what's the point?
That's right.
That's powerful.
Well, that's where the heart comes. You have those moments, and the resistance comes up.
And the courage and the generosity of spirit and all the components that make it gooey and good.
Move forward even with
the resistance. Without the challenge, there's no real reward, because it means you're not stretching at all.
Ah, the infamous stretch.
That's certainly the way we have it framed now. I wonder when that framing might evolve into something else. I don't know what that would be, but I suspect that that beyond that model, there's more.
Well, I'm sure there is, but the one thing that I know for sure, you know, actually, when we hang up the phone, I'm going to be going into the town where I live, Ashland, Oregon. My dear friend Jean Houston.
Say hi to Jean for us.
Yes, we love Jean.
Tell her happy birthday.
She's celebrating her 75th birthday today, and she's having a big party.
Tell her I'm sorry I can't be there.
I will. I will tell her that, Barnett.
We are wishing her a wonderful 75th on air, and another 75.
I will tell her that.
She's good for another 75. If anyone can do another 75, it's Jean Houston.
Right. Well, Jean is really the champion of this whole thing, and she talked about jump time.
Oh, I love that. I love that expression.
Yeah,
yep.
Me too. And, you know, the idea that the pressure has to build. Evolution never happens in these easy, you know, gradual steps.
You got to jump. You got to spark the gap.
Hey, listen, I want to take a quick break, though, because I want to talk about this.
We want to pay a bill. We're going to come back.
Right. Stay with us. Right back on Cutting Edge Consciousness.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
This is Barnett Bain with my co-host Freeman Michaels here on Cutting Edge Consciousness and our special guest Jimmy Twyman. Before the break, Jimmy, you were about to tell us what you were going to do after the show, meeting up with Gene Houston.
Well, we're talking about jump time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but we gotta we gotta thread back and lay the trail.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We're gonna meet up with
Gene Houston, who famously speaks of jump time, because this is the time faced with all kinds of challenges that we leap, we jump, and then we look where we're leaping.
That's right, and you know Gene is so famous for talking about this and many other things. I mean, to me, Gene is one of the most brilliant people on this planet. And she recognized that evolution requires pressure. It doesn't, I mean, we were talking before about things that are cool, and, you know, we may think, well, wouldn't it be cool if evolution was easy?
Mm.
Well, really, it wouldn't be cool. Because when things are easy, we become complacent, and we become inert. We have to be motivated into that next step or that next level. And that's what Gene referred to as jump time, the idea that the pressure builds to the point that you just actually pop into that next level of consciousness or reality.
And there's a way of welcome. We've had, by the way, Gene on the show, and when she was on, we were talking about this idea of welcoming it, and even you know, some level of, I don't know if the word is comfort in discomfort, but at least an acceptance.
There's a certain amount. A friendship with uncertainty.
A friendship with uncertainty, exactly. And I think that piece is really important, at least in my own life, the idea that it's okay for me not to know, and that when things are seemingly coming apart, there's in that an opportunity, because that's what change is. Things have to come apart in order for something to be born.
So, Jimmy, you're very pregnant. With possibility, you've been carrying the and
that's
in
the
love.
First time he's ever been called pregnant.
I want to make sure that it's on his.
Was that a Gene Houston book or something?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't, but it could
sounds
be.
Sounds like
it
one,
certainly
yeah.
could be.
You know,
pregnant with what is yet unborn. That is a little more in the parlance of Barbara than Gene, but
okay.
They are birds of a feather,
right,
certainly.
Yeah,
and I was an actor many years ago, and we would call it a pregnant pause. There was a pause that was pregnant with a possibility.
Well, we're in radio now, so there are no pauses on radio. There is no crying in baseball.
That's called dead air. We don't like that. That's when the station manager knocks and is like, what are you
that's
doing?
That's right. Too much dead air, we're dead air.
Yeah, that's right. We're off.
Yeah, so the party, there's going to be quite an event, and there's going to be quite an excitation, a neuronal exuberance generated there, to quote Gene.
Yeah, I'm looking so forward to being there, obviously, and but I think that it's just a symbol of this amazing time that we're in. You know, we're talking about journeys and caminos and walks, and really that's what we're all on right now. The life itself is a camino, and it's filled with challenges, and I love what you guys both said about welcoming it, and that's true in even the most dramatic of stressful situations. I remember about 6 years ago I went through the most challenging situation of my life. I wrote a book called the Barn Dance about this. But my former wife, Linda, was murdered in Chicago right at the time when she was getting ready to move out to Oregon and we were going to be together. And it was clearly a very traumatic experience for my daughter and everyone who loved her. And I can remember being in the grip of terror and grief, and more so than I've ever been in my life, and at the same time being profoundly grateful.
Mm.
Because I'm a human being, and because I'm awake, I'm alive, and I'm grieving, and I hurt, and this sucks, and I love it.
Mm.
I don't love what happened. That was, you know, the most terrible situation I've ever been through. But what it was stirring within me, the growth that was occurring, and you know, I think this is what you were referring to when you say to welcome it. The first thing that we feel drawn to do is to push it away.
Yeah, and I think it's the Dalai Lama who said, pain is part of life, but suffering is optional. Suffering stems from the idea that what's happening oughtn't to be happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the minute that we start to do that, that resistance causes tremendous suffering. But what you're talking about is the ability to, again, it's welcome it. Because it's here, right?
Be the ocean and not the island.
Yeah, I think that's the key is, I mean, and it's so counterintuitive.
Right.
Because it certainly doesn't seem like the way to go. But I think anyone with experience and spiritual maturity knows that when I do that, number one, the healing is so much greater and quicker.
And it has a different quality to it. There is even in the deepest... the deepest pain sorrow turns to a sweet.
Sweetness.
There's a sweetness in it. There's
yes,
a sweet sorrow
I agree
to
with
it.
That.
Yeah.
So there's a very, very different quality to that.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but it's so true. And I think this is a very important discussion because so many of us want to gloss over. I remember when Linda was killed, so many people. Would come to me and say things like...
Help you numb.
Yeah, they would try to help me spiritual around it rather than go through it.
That's
they would
so
say
brilliant.
Things like, well, you know she chose what happened to her, right?
And this is the crazy kind of double talk of a particular kind of
right.
developmental spirituality that... you know, that doesn't, that pushes away
from the heavy lifting.
From lifting, from
That's
just
right.
from being being totally with what is and making expanding to contain it, to include it. But, you know, we hear, well, you created it all, so why did you create that?
Yeah, and it's just the silliest, most unhelpful thing that you could possibly say
Very much so.
To someone in a situation. Even if it's true, I mean, here's the thing. Even if that is completely true, it still does not matter. I have to be human in this moment. I have to feel this. I have to go through this. Don't give
And, of course,
sort
of to the degree thing. It's true, that, I mean, these things are they are so paradoxical.
Yeah.
And though we all are exploring deeply into our ability, our responsibility around the lives that we generate and create for ourselves and for each other, if I knew today what I know at what I presume to know mentally that I created all, but if I really, really knew that, how might my life be different?
Yeah.
It's unlikely I would be physical doing this shadow play at all.
Yeah.
So it's very much about integrating a piece at a time, and those kinds of languaging, they're not. They're not often helpful.
Well,
if ever.
There's also this idea of skipping steps versus, you know, really recognizing, as you're pointing out, it's a process. And grieving is a process. And honoring...
Very important one.
Really important.
So you have premature...
Premature transcendence syndrome. That's what we call PTS. That's our little phrase here on the show, PTS. Premature transcendence syndrome. There's another piece, too, that you're bringing up, which I think is really important, having to do with being able to trust your feelings.
Yeah.
Look, and Barnett was alluding to this, we've all learned to numb out. You know, we've all, and this is part and parcel of our culture today. I mean, I have some young kids, and I have an older son as well, and they're all prone to distraction because there's so many ways to distract oneself from being with feelings.
Yeah.
And trusting those feelings. And I often say, you know, as a coach, I coach people that, you know, don't trust your feelings until your feelings become trustworthy. Because a lot of our feelings, we were very quick to either evade them or to tie them around a story, right? To get attached to some, what we're speaking of, where there's this little story that line that we can attach our feelings to, but it doesn't allow us to be in the rawness of them.
That's interesting. I like that.
And the work, too, the art that comes out of it, this book that came out of it, see, that comes out of an intimacy with the feeling experience. Because art is generated from the rawness of those feelings, not the canned, you know, storyline of the feeling.
That's right. I mean, I can remember from the time I was a kid when I first started playing guitar and writing songs. It was when I would get a crush on a girl and then get my heart broken that I always wrote the best music.
That's so interesting, Jimmy, because...
You're the only rock and roll person that's ever happened to.
Yeah, you're the first. What's so interesting is
We had breakfast or a lunch a few weeks ago, and what strikes me so powerfully about you is that you are in full bore celebration full time.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
So it's very much a counter experience that you would migrate over to the melancholy. But I suspect it's not quite as melancholy, and it's more the sweet sorrow that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah, that's right. Even when it does come up, because like everyone else, I'm a human being, and we feel things, hopefully. And when it does come up, when you wrap your arms around it and say, "Ah, okay, here you are. Let's get to know one another here." That's when you integrate that shadow.
Let's get close.
Yeah.
Let's get tender. But would you speak a little bit about I'm interested how much awareness goes behind the cultivation, the care and feeding of celebration that is so beautifully expressed through you?
Well, you know, for me, it really is just being awake to the moment.
Mm.
You know, it's funny because for really thousands of years, we have put such mystical sort of importance and distance on this idea that we call enlightenment or being awake. And usually we do so because we want it to be out there in the distance rather than intimate and close.
That's the PTS thing.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
And the fact is, every time we look around us and realize who it is that's standing there and the opportunity that we have to love and to see and to feel, that's what enlightenment really means.
Mm.
And, I mean, the fact is we are filled with light. We just have to see that.
Yeah.
And every moment provides us with an opportunity, in particular through everyone that is sent to us to see. When I say the word see, I mean it with like a capital S. It's like, you know, we can see someone with a small S, which is what the ego does, or we can see them,
mm-hmm.
like an avatar, right?
Mm.
And when we really see someone, which means that we recognize who they are behind their masks, behind their wounds, behind everything, and we see the beloved, we see the Christ, we see the divine, well, however you want to express that, we see that in them. That's the first step. And the only step, really, to seeing it within ourselves.
That's fantastic. And you're seeing their essence. You're seeing the essential
exactly.
self.
I Jimmy you.
Oh, we got a new one around here.
Yeah,
that's good. Now, there's a piece of this, too, I want to touch upon because, you know, Barnett and I are prone to creative ventures. And I will say personally that it's my vulnerability that generates my creativity. And so for me, and this is what I'm hearing from you, so I understand that you, for a long time, going back to your teen years or maybe earlier, there was a relationship with this vulnerable part of this human part of you, which, again, in the teen years is so tricky because we want to be superhuman. We want to be these images of cool and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
So to be okay with the part of us that soft white underbelly, as it were, and allow that to come out in a creative outlet, energetically, that becomes sort of, I'm hooked on it. It sounds like you're hooked on it. You wrote 15 books and countless songs and made some movies, and it's a really great thing.
Yeah, but what have you done lately?
That's right. Come on, do something really impressive. Now,
I have realized, especially in the last few years, like when I'm writing a book or whatever, is that the more vulnerable I am,
that's it.
The more real I am, the more people get out of it. Like when I
and the more you get out of it.
I'm sorry.
And the more you get out of it.
Oh, absolutely. When I wrote The Barn Dance, number one, I wrote that because I had to.
Yes.
Because I was in grief, and I had an experience that I wanted to write about because I knew that it was that creative process that was going to bring me through it.
The book wrote you.
Exactly. That's a much better way of saying it. And then, of course, when I wrote the book, I was raw and real. And I remember my father read it before it went to the publisher, and he looked at me and said, you can't publish this. I mean, there are parts.
No one in this family goes out without their clothes on.
That's right.
So good.
Oh, and, boy.
And I said, I know, and that's why I had to write it.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
About me looking good. This is about me being real. And I have never had a book in my life that I've written that more people wrote to me and said, I read this in one sitting, or I read this in two sitting. I couldn't put it down because I saw myself in this book.
That's beautiful.
And that's what happens when we get that vulnerable and that raw. You know, the ego thinks that's weakness. That's really strength, and I think that's what we need to get.
Beautiful. And getting raw and real with you today has been an absolute pleasure for us and for our audience. Now,
and
before
thank God and thank Jimmy that we brought it around to the circle ends where it begins.
Yeah. That's right.
Hey, this whole thing came together.
Movie. Once again, we put it up online.
Well, this is what I want to give folks. Let's direct folks to a bunch of different places they can get your materials.
Well, if you just go to James Twyman, TWYMAN.com. All of it's there, and you can watch the movie right there online.
Now, we only have about a minute left. Barnett had kind of alluded to this earlier. What's next in store for you? I mean, there's always something, because you're the guy that's always got...
because I seem to be going in a very different direction. Well, what at least appears to be a different direction. I have a beautiful retreat center outside of Ashland here. We are turning into a kind of hermitage.
Oh, interesting.
I have been just feeling a deep need for solitude and quiet, and I'm building a little cabin out here in the woods, and I'm going to be sitting there and just being in nature for a while, and not focus so much on doing, but focus more on being.
And quiet.
Before I do that.
Solitude, and we're all, of course, going to come up and...
Barnett, we're on our way. Let us know.
And you can, hey, if you get here in a couple of hours, you can be here for Gene's party.
I'd love to. As I said, I regret that we're not able to be up there for Gene's party, but love to Gene and love to you, and thank you so much for being with us today. For any of our listeners that did not catch those details, you can also follow up on Jimmy's doings and beings on www.cuttingedgeconsciousness.com.
And stay with us, because Barnett and I will be right back after the break.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And we're back here on Cutting Edge Consciousness, Freeman Michaels with Barnett Bain. Wow. Jimmy Twyman.
Fun guy.
Yeah.
A fun guy.
So human, wise. So real, wise, warm.
Warm.
Yeah.
And
I'll hang out in this cabin for a while.
Well, you could bring the car around. He has substance.
So much
substance.
He
has this quality of expressing what matters to him. What matters to him... going to meet his friends now, what matters to him emotionally, what matters to him spiritually. He takes action to back up what matters to him. And that kind of mattering is a different sense of the word than matter as in rocks and wood and dirt and trees and skin and bone. It's a whole different octave of mattering, and it's beautiful. There's so much light in that matter.
And I love the orientation. I had to write a book about it. That might not be precisely what he said, but it's awfully close to that. In other words, I have to express this creatively. I have to share it. It's so different than, you know, and I've been motivated from both. I think I'll write a book so that everyone will like me and think I'm important and you know, hear what I have to say. I mean, it's a delicate balance, and you and I both know this. Go ahead.
There's an artist's spirit, which is a little different from an artisan's spirit.
Right.
An artisan's spirit is often about executing with a certain kind, with a mastery, the same kind of pot over and over again, or basket over and over again. But the artist spirit, it is the desire to explore a frontier of the self, and then to bring back the treasure and share it for the benefit of the community.
Yeah.
So it is. It's not entirely selfless. It's not about being self-abandoning, but it is about this energy of making a livelihood and There's nothing wrong with being successful, wildly successful, but it's leavened with what can I give of what can I give of my discovery here. And he, in his, in the way he speaks of writing these books, very, very much consistent with that archetype, that artist's archetype.
I love it. And look, artist and artisan go together. There's nothing, I'm sure, when he, you know, first learned to play whatever his first instrument was, maybe it was the piano or guitar or whatever it was, that he learned the chords and the timing and so forth and so on. But they became tools. And the tools don't overshadow. They're just the instruments, you know. And I think often, at least for me, it's very easy to get distracted with the tools and the shtick and the this and the that versus allowing the tools. I said this to you actually today. It was so interesting. Driving in, we often talk about the show and what we're going to do.
Are you repeating yourself?
I am repeating myself. But
but not on air.
No, I'm repeating. Oh, not on air. No, we didn't talk about this on the air.
Good.
This
we
is
don't
the first
get
time.
Calls from anybody.
My wife.
Exactly.
First and foremost.
You're repeating yourself.
Barnett's ducking my wife. That's all he's care about. Let's keep Jasmine out of
it. I'm very frightened now.
She's
this could be contagious.
She's formidable. No, what I was saying to you earlier is we have worked at our craft long enough that we can rely on it. And I really love that because we were kind of overthinking it earlier today. And so it is this balance of being able to utilize the tools without over-identifying with the tools. Really, at some point, trusting they're there. And that's what I get from Jimmy, is that he has a real sense.
So much so.
Yeah, yeah.
What you're speaking to, there's a fabulous way to illustrate this for folks. Fabulous. There is a wonderful actor's exercise, and this is probably going to be familiar to you, Cliff. What was that, Cliff? Who are you?
Drake
Belson.
That's right.
It's probably... For those of you that don't know, that I'm actually sitting here with the Drake Belson.
The original. I was the first one.
The very first Drake Belson from The Young and the Restless.
Yeah, yeah.
You, from your Drake Belson days, might remember an actor's exercise. You would become so familiar with the text, with the script. And sometimes they wouldn't even use the script. They'd use a song. A Happy Birthday to You, Star Spangled Banner. Mm. You'd say the words so with they're so second nature, and then the idea would be to lay into those words an expression of an emotion or an agenda or an intention. So you're going to say the words to Happy Birthday with an intention to get a message
seduce
to somebody
or
seduce.
Yeah.
So what we're really talking about is at this point, the craft becomes so second nature that it is a current. It's like a stream, gently down the stream, and your the words get thrown out like little grains of rice along that stream of intention, and they flow out into the world. You watch a great performer like Meryl Streep. She's not thinking about the words.
No, she's not.
And her whole body
and
is a tool to express.
She's not crafting.
No.
She's got it already.
So second nature that she is moving from beats of emotion to beats of emotion, expressing them full-bodiedly. That is such a revelatory artist because she shares not only the gifts but also the nature of what it is. She reveals what it is, what are the mechanics of being in that state. What happens when you are in that state? Fabulous.
Yeah, and we used to say, trust your instrument, you know, and her instrument is a well-tuned instrument, and she's got access to it. You know,
her instrument is anything that is around her awareness.
She just taps in.
Her instrument.
No question about it. And so, I mean, it's really beautiful when I'm a witness to that, both in others but also in myself. You know, these moments of flow when I go, wow. And that, I think, is one of the things I marvel at with people such as Jimmy or Meryl, who have this, they're so tuned in.
They're so masterful.
It's so masterful.
It's mastery.
It's such a gift. And
we don't come out of the egg like that.
Yeah.
There's that cliche about how do you get to Carnegie Hall, you know?
I don't know the cliche. Tell me.
Do you know the way? How do I get to Carnegie Hall? Somebody stops in the street. you know, rush. How do I get to Carnegie Hall? And the person says, practice, 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 practice.
Did you say? Yeah.
The practice, the practice engenders a particular frequency of energy.
Oh, I love it.
The energy is an energy of that is a sustain. It's an energy of will and action that is a sustaining energy. The generating of art doesn't come out of the practice itself. It comes out of the imagining, the feeling, the appreciation, the care, the beauty, the love, the attention. But in order to give structure to that, they both have to come together. We call that practice.
And it's interesting because as a coach, as you know, these conscious expressions of what we want to generate and how we want to, you know, express aspects of ourselves, I work with people to create practices. These are conscious ways to begin to embody something that then becomes reliable. Then you can rely on it. And
you know that it's not going to go away.
That's it.
Otherwise, you'll have somebody that says, well, I'm going to write 15 books, too. I'm going to start with my first one. And they may have much intention and much laudable ambition and very fine ideas. But it sort of gets blown away like dust in the wind because it is not backed up with the committed will and action.
That's it.
That is grounded through a ritualized behavior.
That's it.
That ritualized behavior is practice.
Practice.
Is whatever we want to call it.
And I say oftentimes that when things are really getting chaotic, to hearken back to something that we talked about in the first segment, referring to when James was referring to Jean Houston, when things get really chaotic in my own life, I rely on my practices. Mm-hmm. I they are reliable. When everything's coming apart, I can go into that you know, practice, either meditation, yoga, all these various practices I have, that really I can rely on. So
that's your personality type. I think that for someone that is more oriented towards the generative energies of imagining and feeling, and I know you well, and I know you are, that what grounds us, that does the reset, is the will and action, the practices. But we also know, we know people, my wife, your wife, who I don't think that they would argue that these are powerful, powerful women who are very comfortable in will and action.
And opinion.
And opinion, and beautifully and powerfully so.
Yeah, of course.
And that when they find balance, when they integrate, when they're more likely to be off their center and to reintegrate by connecting in with the imagining and with the feeling, with the being states, not so much the doing states. So,
yeah, so no, it's always valuable to...
When you put it all together?
Put all together.
You put that all together?
Yeah. Go ahead, put it all together. I'm ready. Weave it all together.
When we put it all together, you have an experience of a person like Jimmy.
Yeah.
You know, that's, to me, one of his absolute most powerful gifts is he models that.
I have to confess to something. Barry, how much time do we have left? Because I got so involved you were saying. I have no idea. We're at 15?
No, six.
Oh, six. Oh,
we're
geez,
fine.
Louise.
We're fine. We can start over.
You talk about whatever you want. I got so engrossed in what you were saying. And I'm usually, I have like one eye on the clock.
Supposed to call home?
No. I lost track of time, and then he kept putting up six, and I thought he was saying 15. It's okay.
I thought his palms were itchy or something. I didn't know. I said, Barry, what are you doing? You scratch me? What do you got? Rash
Lord,
there?
Help me. Hey, there is one thing I want to track back to.
Yeah. Share. Do share. Now we only have 5 minutes.
If I don't share soon, we're going to be in big trouble. The raw and real piece.
Yes.
That I'm willing to be raw, that I'm willing to be vulnerable and open. I'm really negotiating this personally. I'm really negotiating allowing myself to be a little uncomfortable in the world, in my own skin, very authentically, especially when energies are seemingly coming at me, I'll say it in these terms, that I don't know what to do with. And what I've learned to trust is that when I'm feeling as if energies are coming at me that I don't know what to do with, they're usually muddled. and they're confused. So what's happened very recently is I was in a meeting, and the person I was in the meeting with had mixed agendas, mixed stuff going on. And so they were, in essence, sending me mixed messages.
They were petting the horse.
Right, what we call petting the horse. And I allowed myself to be in the confusion of, there was a certain amount of betrayal, to be really honest, too, because there was a manipulation going on. But instead of trying to, like, one-up it or play the game, I just kind of sat in a vulnerability and went, wow. You know, and I didn't even know if I said anything necessarily about, you know, what was going on. I just sat there in a confused way because it was confusing. And it was very interesting. There was another friend of mine who was there in the meeting, an associate of mine in the meeting, and this individual changed gears. Like, I wasn't able to go with him on that ride. And he got really sincere. And after the meeting, my friend said, wow, that's the most sincere I've ever seen that guy. How did you do that? And I went, you know, some part of me couldn't go there. I was in that raw, real, vulnerable place, and I wasn't going to pet with them. I just couldn't. I don't even know consciously what happened. I just sat there in my own, like, wow, what is this about? You know, it was a powerful moment. And I feel, I don't know, I mean, I sort of get the impression from Jimmy, you know, that he's able to be that real in the world. And it's interesting how things then shift around that, that we don't have to, or at least for me, that I don't have to fix it. I don't have to know. I don't have to solve it.
It's very hard for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't, a part of me wanted to rush in and
fix and solve.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah.
So it was powerful. Powerful just to be there with a level of authenticity and show up in the world in that way. And
yeah, it comes from, it is a response habituated out of a strategy that has very small people.
That's it.
We felt my only justification for being alive or for being safe, for being loved, for earning love, is to remedy a situation outside of me, to be in agency with the world.
Right.
To fix others in order that maybe I will be safe and loved. And it becomes a life strategy. To this day, when I confront that tendency in me, that habit, that pattern in me,
yeah.
I am flustered and in way out of my comfort zone.
That's what was happening.
And very uncomfortable.
I was flustered. Yes, I was
all
those things.
I was tapping into feelings that have that were anesthetized well on to 60 years ago.
Yeah,
anesthetized by these behaviors, and now when I don't step up and do them, though the anesthetic wears off, and I'm feeling the panic. Now the good news is, I'm close to 60 years old, and I can handle panic that I could not handle at 2, 3, 4, 5, and 10, and 15.
Well, and my body can hold it. It's, you know, it goes back. It's funny because part of this is that whole, remember lifting my heart piece and being that open and feeling like I could be a target. And that's, I've been working on that. I've been walking with that so much that I feel like this is a byproduct of that, that my heart is lifted in a particular way, and I just can't play along anymore. And so the whole thing falls flat. If I'm not willing to play along, and this individual wants to stay in a relationship with me, we have to meet at a more authentic level. And I didn't do anything to try to fix them or solve it. There's no magic pill. I just showed up in a particular way.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
He'll never speak to you again.
I never talk to him again. And I have to risk that.
I'm kidding.
No,
I'm
you're
kidding.
Not. You're not. I have to risk that. I have to risk that if I show up in the world, some people might not like it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So
Barry will be here because he's getting paid.
That's right. The engineer will say, stick around. Everyone else has left the building. I am so grateful, Barnett, for our show today. Always grateful to spend the time with you. It's just a joy to be able to do this.
Good show.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
And for those of you who enjoyed it, we invite you to keep coming back. Please share this with friends.
Share it with Freeman's wife.
And send a note to my wife. Thanks for listening to Cutting Edge Consciousness.
Bye now.